And we're now going to move on to the final of the kinot for today, which is, as always, the kinah for the victims of the Shoah. It's on page 173 in the Rosenfeld, 635 in the Koren. In a certain sense, this is the easiest of the kinot for us to identify with. Of course, it's the most recent of events that happened. But I think, as we've seen throughout the course of the morning, that so many of the events that happened in the previous generations were simply precursors to the Shoah. I want today to speak a little bit about Treblinka. We often put our emphasis on Tisha B'Av, or when talking about the Shoah, we put our emphasis on Auschwitz. But Auschwitz, of course, was only one, but obviously the most infamous, but one of a number of death camps. And there was also Treblinka, giving you a picture on the map of roughly where it was. And you can see from the map that Treblinka, it's pulling in people there from Warsaw and from Bialystok, those sorts of areas. Different accounts of exactly how many people died in Treblinka, something in the region of 750,000, 800,000, something of that nature. I found a book in the library just here, Surviving Treblinka by Samuel Willenberg. It's his own account of his experiences in Treblinka. And, it's worth certainly worth reading to get a sense of the Gates al Mavet that he experienced. One of the things that he particularly describes is that at Treblinka there was an effort to try and disguise the killing chambers as Red Cross facilities. When people arrived on the trains to Treblinka, they were forced to strip, and then there was a forest, and in the forest was the killing facilities. But at the entrance of the forest, there was a Red Cross flag, and there was the idea was that people would think that they're being taken to a Red Cross facility. They didn't want people panicking on arrival. They wanted to be able to, as it were, process them calmly and in an orderly way. And he explains he was one of the lucky ones, so his job was to collect up the clothes of the prisoners after they'd stripped, and then to clear the area where the trains had arrived, so when the next train arrived, people didn't have a sense of what was going to happen, as they shouldn't be panicked when they arrived. But he describes when he first discovered what was going on, that's behind this fake hospital area. He says, noticing my presence, the orderly ordered me to leave at once through a door to the right. I obeyed. However, I found a wall of shrubbery in my way. To circumvent it, I turned left and climbed to the top of a raised bank of sand. Ahead of me, a bored Ukrainian sentry sat on a little chair, clutching a rifle. Before him, down below, was a deep pit. At its bottom were heaps of corpses which had not yet been consumed by a fire burning under them. I stopped in my tracks, paralyzed with terror. The sizzling, half-burnt cadavers emitted grinding and crackling sounds. The flames, once having enveloped them, either dissipated into little jets of smoke or reignited into a blaze which forced firewood and corpses into a devil's embrace. Here and there I could make out the torsos of men, women, or little children. The smell of burning flesh reached my nose and prompted a flow of tears. But very often when we think about the Shoah, we talk about it in terms of 6 million who perished al Kiddush Hashem. 6 million is, of course, a massive number. One of the things we have to do when we think about that six number is to remember that actually 6 million is one person multiplied 6 million times. Every individual, every person who was killed there wasn't just a number, wasn't, some of them weren't even numbers. But in actual fact, everybody was a person. And on our penultimate page, page 33, he gives what I want to finish off with, which is an account of just one little girl from Warsaw who died in Treblinka. I think this is an important account because what it does is it filters the enormous number of 6 million into individual men, women, and children. So he says, after the arrival of a transport from Warsaw, one little girl was left alone on the platform before the adjacent hut. Her age was hard to ascertain. The torn rags which covered her delicate, slender body had apparently been a dress at one time. On her head was a pretty handkerchief. She gnawed at its fringes with her white teeth. Her large, doe-like black eyes flashed about in fright. Her skinny legs were red from the frost, and her feet were sheathed in gleaming shoes with very high heels, in stark contrast to the rest of her miserable attire. She had evidently acquired these from someone in the ghetto who had taken pity on her, or perhaps she had found them in an empty flat. She was clutching a partly eaten loaf of bread to her chest, as if afraid that someone might steal it from her. That chunk of bread, how she obtained in it what we knew as a starvation ghetto, was her total wealth. With her frightened eyes, she gazed at the platform and the wagons pulling away from it. A figure appeared at the gate in the barbed wire fence with its interwoven pine branches. It was the august might of the SS, striding onto the scene in the high boots which disguised his crooked legs. We called him the Angel of Death. Creeping like a cat, a smile of satisfaction on his dull, fair, mustachioed face, he stealthily approached the new prey. Reaching her, he pushed her gently, almost imperceptibly, as if not wanting to dirty his murdering hands. He pushed her as a child might push a large ball, prodded her with a stick so that she might start rolling by herself. Thus, the Angel of Death led her to the rear gate between the two huts abutting the platform. He propelled her towards the sorting yard and the innocent fence at its edge, with its pine branches. Behind it was the lazarette. The sorting yard overflowed with giant piles of clothing. As the Angel of Death nudged her along, the girl stepped into the yard with her red shoes, heels sinking into the sand. Like an apparition from another world, she approached the sorters one after another, glancing at the contents of the suitcases as she were browsing around a market. She wandered amongst us, showing us a gentle smile and terrified eyes. Stopping at one of the suitcases, she withdrew kerchiefs of various colours and flung them into the air as if dancing. Work came to a halt. Everyone contemplated this strange specimen of Warsaw misery. She roamed from one prisoner to the next, one bundle to the next, one suitcase to the next. In every suitcase she found something, tossed it into the air and went on. She stopped between one suitcase and pulled out a pair of glasses, part of the rich collection of spectacles assembled from the belongings of so many who had been exterminated by gas. Suddenly her skinny face froze with fear. Terror seized her whole body, driving the madness from her. She seemed to have become a normal person. She clutched the glasses of a small child, gazed at them with disgust and threw them into the sand. Her eyes radiated a terrible fright. She looked at us, at the prisoners, at the whip-toting foreman, and the SS men strolling around the yard. She contemplated us with the intuition of an animal who senses that its end is near. She began to step back to distance herself from the towering multicoloured mountain. The terror in her eyes grew. Might approached her and pushed her towards the opening in the green fence with its flapping Red Cross flag. No one said a word. The foremen stood with their heads down, their whips slack. The prisoners stopped working. Everyone watched the little girl from Warsaw as the Angel of Death meets with the SS, pushed her towards the lazarette. She vanished behind the fence. A few minutes later, we heard a shot. Silence. Utter silence everywhere. Then Meat strode back through the gate, slipped his pistol back into its black holster, and slapped invisible dust from his palms. At that very moment, as if by order, the capos and the foremen began howling, spurring the prisoners back to work. Their voices hit us from all sides. Work, you bastards! Schnell, schnell! Whips sliced the air above our heads. The noise we knew was not meant for us. It was the only possible way of protesting for what we had just witnessed. Thus we played the little girl from Warsaw our last respects. will never know the name of that little girl from Warsaw. But hopefully she knows that today she's being remembered in Kilat Alitzion. We'll read the Kinah together. Eicha tifarteinu meiroshenu hishlachta. Eicha fanechta mimenu histarta. Eicha